Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And a warm welcome to the show. Bill Arnold here. Thank you for tuning in. Awfully glad you've decided to join me. If you're just climbing into your car, I hope you had a good day so far. I've got a really interesting show planned for you today. If I don't plan it for me, I plan it for you. Judge Jeanine Pirro, I had a chance to talk to her last week. I'm going to air some of that interview I had with her. And then Dr. Ken Kaiser, who was nice enough to stop by, he's going to give some feedback to that interview as well. And we're going to talk about a few other things, too, like that 3D printer that prints guns. You can print a gun off a 3D printer. I don't get that. I don't get 3D printers. I bought one, and the first thing I printed was a printer. Then I returned the 3D printer. So it all worked. It's all good. So we have a great show. We're going to take a little break in just a minute and then bring Judge Jeanine Pirro on. But you know I love Scripture and lots of it on this show. And I want to get like a million people to read Scripture on the show. So I need more helpers. So here's what you do. Call 877-933-2484 and just read your favorite verse, and I'll put it on the show. Just say what the verse is and then read it in your best voice, and then we'll put it on the air. And after a million people have read Scripture on the show, I think I'll get a tattoo. All right, to get things started, here's my good friend Jim reading a piece of Scripture.
God is sovereign. Reading from Psalm 139, verse 16. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. God is God, I am not.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way, you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
Welcome back to the show. When I picked up Judge Jeanine's book, Liars, Leakers, and Liberals, The Case Against the Anti-Trump Conspiracy, I instantly said I want her on the show. I have always wanted to book a judge by its cover. Welcome to the show, Judge.
That's very good.
Oh, thank
you.
I'm well, thank you. I did a little research on your family. Now, was your mom a department store model?
Yes, when I was very young, my mom was a store model. When models would do that. Yeah, that was many years ago.
Yeah. And my mom was one, too. So I just feel like such this close affinity to you already.
Well, I'll tell you, hopefully before the show's over, we'll find some more connections.
Yeah, that's right.
Other than one is certainly many years old, and my mom is doing well, and she's still healthy, thank God. How about yours?
Well, she passed away in January, so I miss her like crazy.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. And Jeanine, did your dad sell mobile homes?
My dad was in a business where mobile home sales were part of the business.
Okay.
And my dad was a veteran of World War II, and he's from Scranton, Pennsylvania, and he passed many years ago.
Okay. I was just wondering if your dad sold mobile homes. I'm trying to picture you in high school taking your driver's test and showing up in a Winnebago or something. Because, you know, dads always get company cars, so... And
yeah,
are you
not my dad, thanks.
Yeah, Judge, are you Lebanese? Are you Italian? What are you?
I am of Lebanese descent.
Okay.
And I am third generation, actually. My mom and dad were born here. So I am a proud American and proud of my heritage as well. And that's one of the reasons I feel so strongly about the book. I mean, we all work so hard to come to this country and make a success of ourselves and our families. And all we want is a fair shot. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you're from. And unfortunately, in America today, we've got some liars, linkers, and liberals who are trying to change the whole establishment so that they can change America from other than what people come here for, and that is a place of truth and justice and law and order.
Yeah. Now, I want to get to the book, but I have another little inside Fox News question for you. Who is judgier, you or Judge Napolitano?
Well, you know what? I have to tell you, I was an elected judge. I don't know if I don't believe that Judge Napolitano was elected. I think he may have been appointed, but it matters not. You know, for me, I was the first woman elected county judge, and it was a superior court. I've been a prosecutor for many years before that. But I stepped off the bench, even though I had a 10-year term, because I wanted to go back to fighting. I wanted to be the DA. And so I've run for office 5 times in New York, and for both DA as well as judge. And I am trained in, you know, in putting together a solid case, making my arguments. And that's why I wrote the book. I mean, I connect dot by dot. I connect the dots to what happened in this last election and what is happening in terms of the effort to try to frame Donald Trump while the left tried to drag a flawed candidate across the presidential finish line. And, you know, they didn't succeed, obviously, but there are a lot of problems right now. And one of them is the fact that we have an attorney general who's hiding in a closet somewhere.
You know, what has happened to our country in terms of incivility? I cannot believe the amount of venom that I see on TV every night and on the radio, for that matter.
Well, you know, I think that the left is having a hissy fit. I mean, they can't believe that they lost. Look, everybody in the media and everybody in the news said, oh, Hillary Clinton's going to win 95%. And then this outsider wins. And America was, you know, was astonished. And America then realized, you know, a lot of what they're telling us isn't based in fact. It's not accurate. And that's why Americans instinctively elected the outsider president. And I talk about this in the book. It's not about whether you're Republican or Democrat. It's about whether you're establishment, part of the swamp where one hand washes the other, where, you know, the lobbyists and the pharmaceutical companies, they pay to make sure that you as a congressperson get elected again. And the truth is that people go to Congress on mediocre means, and then, you know, they come out multimillionaires or their families are this isn't right. It isn't right, and Americans instinctively knew it, and that's why they elected the outsider president.
Yeah, Judge, journalism, does it feel like it's on life support?
Well, I got to tell you, you know, let's hope that's never the case, but the fourth estate is supposed to be, you know, that part that keeps an eye on the three branches of government, the three co-equal branches of government. But, you know, as I talk about in the book, Liars and Leakers, I talk about the fake press. And, you know, everyone says, oh, that's not right. Well, you know what? Donald Trump made a decision to take on the press, and everyone said it was suicide. Well, it wasn't suicide. We find out that Brian Ross, who's an investigative journalist, he comes out, he's one of the most respected in the business. He comes out and he says, Michael Flynn is now going to testify against Donald Trump, and Michael Flynn is going to tell us about Russia collusion, that the president colluded with Russia. And yet we find out that's not true. And Michael, Brian Ross has since left ABC. You know, I go on The View, and all of a sudden the wheels come off the wagon because they don't want to hear what I have to say. I'm invited on The View to talk about my book, Liars and Leakers, and they're like, we just want to trash the president. And they have been in this Trump derangement syndrome. And I think Americans need to understand that this president is a force of nature. He gets up every day and he fights a good fight. Unemployment has never been lower. You know, we've got more jobs and people to fill them. Everybody thought they were going to have their heads cut off with ISIS. The caliphate is destroyed in the Middle East. You know, when the last president couldn't figure out whether to dismantle them or destroy them, and he didn't do either. And then the other issue is that, you know, we've got an economy that is going through the roof. GDP is going to be well over 4% when the Obama bozos thought 1% was the new normal. You know, it's all good stuff, but I think that Americans need to be able to connect the dots, as I do in the book, with footnotes if you need them, as to what happened, how the highest echelon of the FBI and the Department of Justice looked to take down an outsider and to frame him with a Russia collusion. And you know what? I think Americans know it. They know instinctively that it's wrong, and that's why they elected the outsider.
You know, when I heard the firestorm over your appearance on The View, I always take what I call my sound off test, where I watch the segment with the sound off, because you can learn a lot about what's going on. And you were so poised and graceful, and you remained so lovely and engaged. And then there was a lot of other fist shaking and anger and fury in people's faces. And I just got to say, Judge, you rocked that one.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. And I don't wish that on anyone.
I get that. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I see you're number 3 on Amazon. And after this interview, you're probably going to be number 1. So that's great.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Yeah. Have a great day. Judge Jeanine, just so much fun. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, Dr. Kent Kaiser, chair of the communications here at the University of Northwestern, will help us talk about what we just heard from Judge. Be back in a minute. Ah, the bagpipes, laddie. That is the intro music to Dr. Kent Kaiser. You may have heard him on the morning show as early as today, and he's back this afternoon joining me for a few minutes. We're going to discuss the interview I just did with Justice Judge Jeanine Pirro and her new book, Liars, Leakers, and Liberals. So, Kent, what do you think about the President Trump bashing? It's real.
Well, it is real. What's more interesting to me about that interview that you did was her own experience there with The View. I mean, what you're seeing is liberal media trying to delegitimize the more conservative media. And they do it, like you said in that interview, with just this venom. And it's almost like they're unhinged, really. And so she is taking the brunt of it. But she does have that poise to be able to withstand the assault, and she does really well at it. Unfortunately, your average everyday conservative activist probably doesn't have quite the same skin to be able to take that kind of an assault, because it's actually happening all over the place, not just with conservative media people, but conservatives in general. But I'm glad she is who she is and able to stand up to the liberals on things like The View.
And I would imagine The View's audience is getting exactly what they want.
They are, and that's the thing. And the funny thing is that audience is much smaller than Jeanine Pirro's. I mean, you know, that's the thing, is that these liberal, that's probably what really bothers these liberal media personalities, is that they know that Fox News and the conservative media have a much greater viewership, listenership than they do, even combined. Like you can combine the biggest of the liberal news media, and they don't come close to matching the ratings that Fox has.
I listened to part of President Trump yesterday, and he was giving a speech, and I think it was the speech he was talking about how he, up until becoming president, he thought he had spent roughly 17 days in Washington, and he didn't know really anybody. And how does a guy like that, who's like a real total outsider, come in and take control of Washington?
Well, no, it's been great to see what he's done, actually. I mean, it's been interesting to see who he's got. He farms stuff out. It's like a businessman, the businessman that he is. He delegates, like, for example, the choice of judges. He has organizations that we agree with. You know, from a Christian perspective, we agree with these organizations who are helping to choose the people who are going to be appointed to judgeships and to the Supreme Court. So it's great. He's also delegated a lot of foreign policy to, you know, the military, which mm-hmm. some people are scared by that or whatever. I think it's great. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at his rhetoric versus what's actually happening, sometimes there's some differences. I think it's all planned. I mean, he'll talk about how Putin is his friend, but then we, you know, increase our military budget dramatically, and we are a threat actually to Putin. Or he talks about Kim Jong-un being, you know, somebody he can deal with, and look at we've amassed a huge fleet off the coast of China and North Korea. And so you kind of have to look at the policy that's taking place. And oftentimes I think the policy, I mean, the president's obviously calling the shots from the top, but when it comes to the nuts and bolts of policy, he's got really good experts around him. And I think they understand that he's not from D.C., and they've taken the perspective that because he's not from D.C., they can be somewhat more aggressive anti-establishment people than they could have been in any previous administration.
Mm-hmm. What do you see when he goes out and talks policy? Do you see businessman? Do you see politician?
I see negotiator. You know, look at the thing with tariffs. I don't agree with raising tariffs, and I'm really skeptical of them. But if you look at what's happened, he goes out there, and I've been saying before, you know, he goes out there and he throws out some wild, you know, he puts a line in the sand that's really wild. Like, look, I'm going to kick you in the groin and charge you $10 if you don't do what I say. And the other person on the other side says, no, I'll give you the $10. Just don't do the other thing. You know, just don't kick me. You know, and look, he's getting what he wants. Look how fast the Europeans came to the table about tariffs, you know, and on significant things like mm-hmm. cars. You know, all of a sudden, you know, they're at the table. Well, you know, if this were some other president, that wouldn't be happening. But, you know, tariffs have gotten worse and worse and worse over the decades. And this president's finally saying enough is enough. Mm-hmm. You know, past presidents have been like, okay, it's getting worse, but it's not that bad. We can put up with it. But this president is saying, no, I think when all said and done, if he gets what he wants, he's going to turn out to be the most radical free marketer there ever was.
I mean, all right, the news came out about the GDP. I mean, come on. Can't we all, like, do a couple of cartwheels?
Well, right. And then, you know, I think that if it lasts for more than one quarter, then we'll see some cartwheels. But it is interesting. I said right away, when the news came out about the GDP being high, you knew that the liberal media was immediately going to be talking about how the economy was heating up and that there was a threat of inflation. And mm-hmm. that's exactly what happened. They don't celebrate
nothing.
Anything good. If it's whatever's good, they'll turn it into something negative because it's attached to this president.
Yeah, it's quite old, isn't it?
It really is.
The whole thing is really old. I certainly, whether you disagree with the president's style, many do. Many Christians are quite turned off by what they perceive to be just kind of a not a good guy.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's getting stuff done. It's all good.
Yeah. All right, Kent, today, not to shift gears a little bit, but I do want to talk about today in history. Because we live in Minneapolis/St. Paul, and it was on this day 11 years ago that the 35W bridge collapsed, which was a national news.
Right.
And I was just doing a little bit of research of the 607,380 bridges in the U.S., 65,000 are classified as structurally deficient and 20,000 as fracture critical.
Well, we hate it when they take our bridges down and make us reroute, and so
you can kind of
understand why they why we're running over them beyond their lifespan,
mm-hmm.
And it's expensive. So, you
but
know,
infrastructure isn't that something that the Republicans and Democrats can agree on?
Well,
readily?
You would think so, and the president came in and hoped to get some infrastructure legislation passed, but the Democrats are opposed to everything he proposes, even when it's much greater spending for something like infrastructure that they otherwise would agree with.
What about voter ID? President wants to get photo ID back.
Well,
in the
voters this issue's been long. Of course, it's near and dear to my heart, having worked at the Secretary of State's office. But I think that it's hard to get photo ID for voting, I think, because the liberals have made it such a human rights issue or whatever you want to say. So meanwhile, you have to show an ID to buy paint and to take you know, brush over to the compost heap and, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, all different things. And,
so why do the Democrats or why are people opposed to voter ID?
Well, they claim it's voter disenfranchisement.
What does that mean?
So somebody would be dissuaded from showing up at the polls to vote if they thought that they had to show a photo ID.
Why?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. And you do have to be also, you have to be very cautious when you see a liberal say that they're okay with photo ID and, oh, here, because there's plans where you could produce those state-issued photo IDs right there in the polling place, and that would be a very dangerous thing to do, too, because those could be just as fraudulent as, you know, wooden nickel. And that's what I've seen some Democrats propose. Like, oh, we could install this new equipment in the polling places where if somebody didn't have an ID, we could print one for them right there, and then that makes it state-issued.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful about like what kind of photo ID you wind up with. We want something that's legitimate and something that's actually going to prove who you are.
Yeah, I know I know you're a gun advocate, and now I've been hearing and seeing that there is now a printer that can print. A 3D printer can print a gun.
Yeah, and I need one because it exists. you know, I wouldn't have needed one if it hadn't existed. But now that the plans have been downloaded something like 100,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a judge out in the Northwest who's said that who's trying to suppress this. And I mean, of course, it's a free speech issue to be able to send around plans for making these guns. And so this judge is. Trying to put the kibosh on this, and so it'll be interesting. I think this is one that could very well go up to the Supreme Court as a free speech issue, not as a gun rights issue, probably as a free speech issue first. So, but yeah, I'm sure that these plans are, since these plans have been downloaded 100,000 times, I can't believe they're not out there. They must be out there on LiveLeak or someplace for other people to get a hold of them and print their guns.
You can apparently get these guns through security at the airport because...
Well, they do have metal on them. I mean,
there
is some metal on them to make them legal. There has to be. So you can't have a totally non-metallic gun and be legal. So
and you would know that. That's what I love about it.
So they do have one or two pieces of metal to make them legal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I saw there's another story of a judge saying that students, I think it is in Oregon, that if you identify as transgender, you're welcome to the bathroom and the locker rooms, period.
Right.
Your thoughts?
Well, I think that, you know, at some point you get to the point of absurdity and you're going to have different values, of course, liberal values actually butting up against one another, because at some point the feminists are probably going to be opposed to a guy being in their locker room,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, because they're supposed to have equal facilities but separate. And, you know, if you're mashing them together, then I think that's where it's going to happen. It's not going to be the conservatives who are opposed to this. I think it's going to be that on the liberal side, you're going to have this clash of values.
All right, 45 seconds left. You're a Renaissance man. You're going to be baking, or you did bake, a rhubarb pie.
Blackberry pie yesterday.
Blackberry
they grow
pie.
Wild
That's
in
crazy.
My yard. I know.
They grow in your yard by your garage, and
That's
then you
right.
just make a pie.
That's right.
And I feel like such a loser every time you come in. Amazing.
Well, you know, I like sweets, so I bake.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for your perspective. I always enjoy having a talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep. That's Dr. Kent Kaiser, Chair of the Communications here at the University of Northwestern. We'll take a little break. We'll be back with lots more in just a minute.
It is true, walking with God is incredibly fulfilling. But as we all know, our walk with the Lord can be challenged by many things. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count. A good friend of mine, Steve Sellers, a leader with Crew, talks about navigating those challenges.
There are times where, you know, my passion wanes or it gets crowded out, and my temptation is to come back and try harder to be more connected to Jesus. And in reality, I just need to come back to Him and pray one of the greatest prayers ever prayed, and that is, Lord, have mercy on me. Ask Him to do a work in my life to draw my heart back to Him. We fall more in love with Him by just being honest about where we are, confess those things, and giving Him access to our heart and just ask Him to have mercy and to lead us back into deeper relationship with Him.
For more ideas on walking with God, go to makingyourlifecount.com.
I always get happy when Dr. Ann Bradley comes on the show, and she is with us today. She is an author and an educator and a blogger and just a really nice, smart person. I can't wait to speak to her every time she says yes. And she's the Vice President of Economic Initiatives at the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. And as you know, we try to regularly get her on the show. Hello, Ann.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So nice to have you on the show once again. And I was kind of chuckling to myself in a very sad way about the Venezuela president, Maduro, saying, all right, this whole thing, this whole experiment is a bad idea. 80% of people don't have electricity, and socialism has ruined us.
Yeah, it is quite a turn of events, at least rhetorically, to hear Maduro saying those things. And I think this is just the inevitable result of centralized economic planning. And the worry that I have, and you and I have talked about this a lot, I think the worry that ordinary Americans should have about these things is that, you know, this is not something, you know, I think in the 80s with the fall of the Berlin Wall and the fall of the Soviet Union, people kind of sat back and thought, okay, we've won this. We've figured this out. Free markets and the kind of classical liberal ideas are going to reign. And that's not true. I mean, certainly they've made progress in many places, but if you look at a Venezuela today, you see a place that's being absolutely devastated. And, you know, I think this sounds kind of pessimistic, but it's possible for any society to get there if we do things the wrong way. So there's a right way to human flourishing and there's wrong ways to human flourishing. So this is not it's not a negotiable. It's not, well, this is my opinion. It's facts based in objective reality. Socialism and centralized planning does not work. It leads to human immiseration. And Maduro, I think, his Hail Mary. You know, he knows that there's going to be footsteps on his door soon. And so I think, you know, it will be interesting to see what, if anything, comes from this in terms of reform.
Mm-hmm. Now, is he blaming the party?
Well, if you look at his statement, he says, this is my fault, this is our fault.
Oh, good.
You know, collectively our fault.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think he's speaking mostly there in that statement to his party. But, you know, he doesn't want to be, he doesn't want a revolution, and that's the path they're on. He doesn't want to be overthrown. And so I think this is where the rubber meets the road. And so he's going to have to not just talk that talk, but walk the walk of real reform. I mean, 1,000,000% projected inflation rate in Venezuela. That is hard to even conceptualize what that means. We don't really understand that number, but what it means is that people are going to be doing the things, the visuals you see from the Great Depression, where people are burning money because money is less valuable than paper. When people are putting, you know, money in a wheelbarrow and taking it just to buy a small jug of milk or loaf of bread. That's what 1,000,000% inflation means. And it's immiserating to people. Mm-hmm. So he can't keep it up. He's got to reform.
And wasn't Venezuela one of the richest oil countries in South America? I mean, didn't they just have it all at one point?
They had it all. I mean, in terms of economic freedom and political freedom, it was a good, you and I might consider visiting there, right? We might go on vacation there.
Off season.
We get a good flight. I mean, it's a beautiful country, rich in natural resources.
Yeah. So now there's 80% people in Venezuela don't have electricity, and you can't get toilet paper. Other than that, socialism sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, you know, and the bloodshed and the violence and just lacking access to basic medical care. It's, like I said, I think immiserating is the right word here.
And yeah, which I don't know what that means, but I love it anyway. Immiserating?
Really, really bad.
Yeah. No, it is. And I want my listeners to hear me say, my heart is broken for this country. I have nothing but compassion. But when I hear about what's going on in America with all this, you know, talk of socialism, that's the thing that kind of makes me pause and go, is this really what part of America wants, is to head that direction?
Yeah. And you know that I am in the classroom with my students who are undergraduates, and this is what I hear over and over again, that it's, you know, they want the kinder, gentler socialism. They certainly are not claiming that they want the outcomes that Venezuela has or Nicaragua. They don't want that. But they would say, well, that's just socialism gone wrong. We need democratic socialism, because when you put the word democratic in front of socialism, then what the implied meaning there is that, well, once you get a guy like Maduro, we'll just use the democratic process to oust him, and then we'll get a better socialist, a benevolent socialist, an altruistic socialist in there, and things will be fine. So that model of economic and political systems is dependent on not only socialism being operational, meaning we can figure out how many loaves of bread to produce and what the price should be, which is a problem, but secondly, it's based on the need for benevolence, which is that you have someone that you can put in that position of extreme power who will be immune to the lure of power, mm-hmm. and to the lure of centralizing power. And never in human history have we put somebody in any kind of office, whether it's the United States or the Soviet Union, who has been able to withstand the lure of power. And that's why the founders were so worried. I mean, they were worried about tyranny. That's what they fled from. And so the founding documents have been so far, you know, effective, not foolproof, but effective, because there's built-in mechanisms to quench, you know, to kind of tie the hands of the leader so that you can't concentrate power.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this. Now, this the Democratic Socialist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I know that she's going to be in San Francisco for a fundraiser at $2,700 a plate, which I kind of find ironic. But also, she's got all these ideas for socialism, but she really has no idea how they're going to be paid for. And in a moment of candor and honesty, she said on a late night show the other night that she goes, well, I'm not really quite sure. And she made some suggestion that maybe the rich will pay more and we'll cut back on some other programs, and that should cover it.
Yeah, I mean, this again, you know, I certainly admire her passion and, you know, her desire to seek change. I don't think she wants us to be like Venezuela either. I think we have to give her that benefit of the doubt. But there's a complete ignorance here of how economics works. And I would say Bernie Sanders, it's the same story. It's just a complete ignorance, and it's taxing the rich at ever higher levels, and this is supposed to be the silver bullet to solve all the problems of where are we going to get the money. And this also hasn't worked. I mean, you can look across the globe at countries that have very, very high progressive taxation rates, and you know what they have? Very low levels of job creation, high levels of youth unemployment, lower levels of innovation and entrepreneurship. Because as you start taxing somebody at 75, 80, 85%, you know what they do? They hide their income or they take their business elsewhere because they can't afford to be in business. And so I think there's a real fundamental misunderstanding for Ms. Cortez and others. And that's a problem because, you know, if our students, if our rising generation are just going to buy this without asking the tough questions, we're going to get ourselves in a situation that could look like what Venezuela's in. And I don't say that to be dramatic, and I don't say it as hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
I say it as we have to be guardians of liberty and guardians of a free society, and we have to be smart mm-hmm. about these kind of things. And just to say, well, it's no big deal. The rich will pay for it. Well, once you've bankrupted the rich, then what are you going to do? You know, and nobody's really positioned to answer that question. I haven't heard Sanders or Cortez really answer that question. Well, once we've done that, say we could tax the rich at very high rates and they would pay it, they wouldn't leave, they're going to be bankrupt. So then what do we do? I mean, it's a real question. You know, so the key here is the flip side of the argument. They want to stop wealth. I think we're talking about here is how do we create a society where more people can create more wealth?
Right.
That's the flip side of the question. And they, you know, they kind of ignore that, and I think at their peril.
And what is give us a little, take us into the classroom here. What's the best economic model for thriving?
Well, I think this is a great question, and I think we have to be careful about it because there's no perfect. And so that's what my students will tend to say. They'll say, well, you know, where's the perfect? What's going to solve the problems? And that's not the right question because it's a fallen world with fallen people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the best model that leads to the most human flourishing for the biggest number of people, which is what we kind of claim, particularly as Christians, that we care about the poor, we care about the oppressed, we care about the marginalized. How do we include people who've been excluded? What system does that? And I think it's market-based economies. And what do I mean by that? I mean where there's private ownership of firms, businesses, factories, manufacturing plants. Like, think of, you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, the biggest entrepreneurs you can think of in your mind. What were they doing 40 years ago? They were in their parents' garages, tinkering, noodling, mm-hmm. being, you know, like budding entrepreneurs. That's how they all start. We want a society where ordinary people, not rich people, not powerful people, not political people, but ordinary people like you and me have a shot. You know, as my friend Deirdre McCloskey says, a society where ordinary people can give it a go.
Yeah.
And that's what markets provide. They provide opportunities for people to give it a go. They don't provide equality of outcomes. They don't ensure that you're going to be on Time magazine as the world's richest entrepreneur. That's never a promise. But that's not what we're really after. I think we're after a society where we can do our best with what God has given us, and we can, and that is what positions us to create jobs for others, to take care of our families, to take care of our churches, and to give back to our communities. And I think, again, I think that's what we all want.
Yeah. And if you said to your students that you were to provide a service that benefits society and it also provided you with a benefit, would that not be a good thing? Would not all of your students say, yeah, that's a good thing?
I think if you put it in that way, they would say, sure, that's a good thing. You know, if I can do something that's good for me but also good for others, you know, and I think underneath your question is this idea of a positive-sum game or a zero-sum game. And I think that's the Cortez and the Sanders line, is that wealth is zero-sum. And that is true in some places. For example, Afghanistan, Venezuela, wealth is zero-sum, meaning the people who are getting richer usually are politically connected and they're using that as leverage to exploit other people. But, you know, Bill Gates has made my life immeasurably better, but he has also gotten richer. But so have I. It's not like he took from me mm-hmm. and he got richer and I got poorer. In fact,
right.
he got richer, but I would say I got richer in fantastical ways that I couldn't have even imagined, because without Microsoft, without Apple, well, how would I be writing books and writing papers? And, you know, it would be much harder than it
right.
is right now, for example.
I need to take a break here, Ann, but I always think that socialism can be best defined by the Department of Motor Vehicles, and capitalism can be best described by walking into an Apple store. Which would you prefer
right.
to do? I go Apple Store every time. Let me take a break. More with Dr. Ann
me
Bradley
too.
From the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics. The Big Hands on the 45. We'll be right back. It is August number one today. Hard to believe already. We're in our third month of the summer. I love summer. I just wanted to go slower. So that's because I live in Minnesota, and summer usually ends around mid-August. And it starts cooling off, and then all of a sudden we know what's next. Anyway, Dr. Ann Bradley is with me on the phone. She is from the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics. And Ann, I saw this article, and it triggered my interest in discussing this with you. Universal basic income experiment has failed in the province of Ontario, Canada. The program was set up last year and was expected to run for 3 years, with 4,000 people selected to receive $1,000 a month. But an election that swept the Liberal Party out of power brought it to an end 2 years early. Is it ever a good idea to uncouple work with money?
Almost never a good idea. I mean, when we use the word work, though, I think we mean work for hire or work for pay. And I think that's the way you're referring to it.
I am.
The way these programs refer to it. You know, I think there's a broader understanding of work, which is work in the community, work in the church, work in the family, of course. But yes, I think work for hire should be for hire, meaning if and there's a very basic fundamental economic reason for this, which is that we're self-interested people, and it's hard to get somebody to show up every day without incentivizing them to do so. So, I mean, think about it. Would you go to work every day, no matter, you know, how much you love what you do, would you go for free? Would you go if they didn't pay you and they didn't give you an office and there was no benefits and you could never take a vacation day, these types of things? And most people wouldn't do that forever. I mean, think about your volunteer work.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things you may be called to, but we tend to take seasons and we take breaks and things like this. So it's a different type of hourly commitment as well. And again, it goes back to what you were talking about before, which is this, you know, positive sum game idea that we know market economies are based on, which is that when Bill Gates goes to work and he's productive as an entrepreneur, he's not the only one that benefits. And when I go to work and I'm in the classroom and I try to be better at what I do, I'm not the only one who benefits. Yes, I get a paycheck for it, but I'm giving something in return for the paycheck. And so market economies encourage us to become more specialized, become better at what we do, and why, we might ask, well, to what end? Who cares? Well, the reason we care is that the better we all are at what we do, the more discovery there's going to be in a society. And when I say discovery, that's really what entrepreneurship is about, is again, ordinary people discovering new, better ways of doing things. And that is what we need for human flourishing, for health, for thriving. I mean, if we want to, you know, beat the war on cancer, what do we need? We need smart people discovering new ways of doing things. If we want to live longer, we need to discover, you know, all sorts of things in the battle on health. And so that's really what we don't need commissars. We don't need technocrats in charge. That hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I think we don't. And the beauty of all of this is God has created all of us uniquely with talents. And so you don't know where the next Einstein or the Gates or the Jobs or the Bezos or whoever, you don't know who that next person is going to be. And I mean that in a completely global way. They might come from, you know, Flint, Michigan. They might come from Ghana. We don't know. And we want to be open to all the opportunities that are out there in terms of human creativity. And so you asked before, what system does that best? It's market-based capitalism,
mm-hmm.
Which is the idea that ordinary people, again, can give it a go. They can have an idea and put their money where their idea is. And the only way they make a profit or, quote-unquote, get rich is if they've served their fellow human beings. And that's really powerful because, again, you know, Bill Gates does this. He eats just fine. His health care is probably the best in the world. We're not so worried about him. But what we are worried about is the single mother that lives in, you know, Anacostia of Washington, D.C., or Baltimore, or Detroit. She's struggling every day. How do we help her? We help her by empowering her to be a beneficiary of other people's gifts and ideas.
Mm.
And that allows her to unleash her own creativity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a win-win scenario. I think that's what we need to talk about more.
Mm-hmm. If you just turn the show on, I'm speaking to Dr. Ann Bradley from the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics. She's an economist herself. Let me ask you this, Ann. Let's say I walk into a coffee shop and I'm trying to make conversation and I say, well, the GDP report was great. Then what should I say?
You mean if you're trying to win someone over to this way of thinking?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't think you should start with GDP. I always make a joke. It's funny that you bring that up. I make a joke on the first day of my class because I get a lot of people who are not econ majors. And so they come into my class on the first day and they're terrified. And they have there's a lot of drudgery. You know, they're just like, get me out of this class. And the first day I say, how many people lost sleep in the last 6 months? And everybody raises their hand. And then I say, keep your hand up. If the reason you lost sleep in the last 6 months is because GDP did not grow in the last quarter at the rate that you wanted it to. And nobody keeps their hand up, right? They
mm-hmm.
laugh at it. Because I think the idea is GDP seems like technical and far removed from us. But what do we really care about? We care about a society where everybody has a chance, We care about a society where people can rest easy, lay their head down on their pillow at night, under shelter, with medical care, food in the fridge. That's what we care about. Now, GDP, yes, is a measure of those things. But I think the way we, like if I was able to have coffee with Bernie Sanders, which, you know, hasn't happened yet, I would say, you know, we want the same things. We want the rich not to be able to use economic wealth and transition that to political power and not to be exploiters. We want the poor to have opportunities and to escape poverty. In that way, Bernie Sanders and I very much want the same things. That, I think, is how we start the conversation, not by vilifying people who are not in the same political party or didn't vote the same way we do, because that those kind of fights don't get us anywhere. But I think saying, hey, you know, we both seem to be worried about the poor in the United States. And that's a real phenomenon. And as Christians, we're really called to care for them. So if that's our starting point, see what that does is it starts us from the same spot. And then we can say, okay, let's have a real conversation that's thoughtful about how we get there. That, I think, is how we have these dialogues. So GDP is important, and I care about it because I'm an economist, but very few people do. And I think it seems kind of, again, technical and not relevant to their lives. But what is relevant? They care about their communities. They care about jobs. They care about whether they can pay their bills. Now, these types, and I think those are the terms that we need to talk to people on.
And as
that would be my recommendation.
Oh, I like that. And as an economist, I'd love to get your reaction to a couple different scenarios. I'll keep these brief. It took Jeff Bezos 20 years at Amazon to make his first $50 billion, then 2.5 years to make his next $50 billion, and 6 months to make his most recent $50 billion. Apple Computer is inching towards a $1 trillion company. As an economist, give me your reaction to both of those.
Well, I think my first reaction is that obviously these things start very slow, and I think we need to keep that in mind, is that again, this is relevant with the caveat that in a market-based society, we're not assuming that you're starting out wealthy necessarily or having this giant empire, but that empires have to be, business empires that is, have to be grown from something. You could say the same about Walmart. And so, you know, objectively, when I look at those numbers, I do not on paper have a problem with them, meaning the rate of growth of these companies. Once you make, you know, to make your first $50 billion is really hard. Very, very few people do this. But then with that amount of capital and collateral, you can do a lot more. And I actually think this is what Sanders is worried about. And with some, in some ways, he's right. Because I think the problem is that when you get to be a Bezos or a Gates, you get to have a lot more political influence. And if you look at all those guys, they tend to be kind of more involved in political types of conversations. And I think that's where we need to be worried. It's not that he's a billionaire, or I think Jeff Bezos is a centrabillionaire, which is a person with a net worth over $100 billion.
Yeah.
He's the only person on the planet. So,
yeah.
So, you know, on paper, I have no problem with it because it means he's created value for society. But if he can use economic wealth to be translated into political privilege and political influence, that's where we need to be worried.
And now, Anne, remind
that's
us.
Really.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, no, go ahead.
Yeah, remind us where our true treasure is.
Yeah, Jesus, right?
Thank you.
You know, all the money in the world is not going to change anybody's heart, ever. It's Jesus. And so I think and now if you want it, because the poor will always be with you, I think what we need to learn from that, and as an economist in the 21st century, what I would say is abject poverty will not always be with us. We are richer than we ever have been collectively as a planet. And we're getting richer. But you know what that verse, it's not just about material poverty. It's the poverty of our broken sin and our broken souls. And only Jesus can heal that.
That's so encouraging. And I always like talking to you, Anne. Thank you so much for coming on the program. Dr. Anne Bradley, you can go find out what she is writing on at the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. That's TIWFE.org. And Ann, thanks for being such a great guest and a friend of the show, and I will talk to you next time.
Sounds great. My pleasure. Thanks for having
me. Thanks so much, Dr. Ann Rathbone Bradley. I love her middle name. Coolest middle name in the business. I didn't bring it up right away, but I wanted to end with it because it's so strong. You'll never forget that, Ann Rathbone Bradley. We'll take a little break, and when we come up, we're going to talk about Christianity in the movies. I find that interesting conversation with Rick Dack. And then Peter Scazzaro is going to be with me in hour two. That's all ahead. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.